Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's one of those things that even a casual student of the 16th century Reformation learns first off. A couple things, you know, the bullet points of the Reformation. One of them is none of this would have happened, or at least happened the way or when it happened, were it not for the printing press, the invention of that piece of technology that not only was itself a technological advancement, but gave birth to a whole new way for the average person to consume and distribute and exchange information. So Luther benefits from the printing press, sometimes intentionally and sometimes unintentionally. But what about that bigger market there that was created by this technology and its role in the Reformation? We're going to be talking about the Reformation and the printing press. Dr. Daryl Hart joins us on this Tuesday afternoon, January the 19th. He's visiting professor of history at Hillsdale College and author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled "The Printing Press Prophet." Dr. Hart, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Thanks. Nice to be back with you.
You say that when it comes to both the printing press and to the publication of books there in the 16th century, the reformer Luther was helped not so much by the hand of divine intervention, but as you say, the invisible hand of the marketplace. What do you mean by that?
Well, the convention about the Reformation is that the printing press, which gets a lot of credit to Gutenberg in the middle of the 15th century, Luther did not intend necessarily to become such a public figure, but the printers in Wittenberg caught wind of Luther and what he was up to, and there was a market ready for the development of pamphlet literature and small books that Luther implicitly capitalized on. And this point about the hand of the marketplace is really comes out in the book by Andrew Pettigrew, who deserves credit for making this point. And it's a remarkable book in the sense that it covers the history of printing, history of books in the 16th century, and it shows that Luther in some ways coincided with the rise of relatively cheap or modestly cheap distribution of pamphlet literature. And also there were depictions of Luther, these drawings, etchings of him. So he became both a popular author and a widely recognized figure, as it were. And this became something that the authority of the church and the authority of the emperor could not put back in the bottle. The genie was out. So it's a remarkable way of looking at the Reformation, the way Pettigrew does in this book on Luther.
So was Luther aware of this? Sometimes we're not aware of the things that make for success of any kind of enterprise because we're so much in the middle of it. But was Luther aware of the role of printing and the distribution of both affordable books and pamphlets in the Reformation in time?
He became so, and so one of his chief printers, by the name of Cranach, if that's how you say it, Cranach. Luther eventually worked considerably with this printer on how his book should look. And so there's a sense in which Luther was aware, but I don't get the sense, the way Pettigrew tells the story, that Luther was fashioning himself for the public the way, say, modern celebrities may do or the way publicists may do. I don't think that was as much at stake. It does seem that Luther was interested in books that had the right look to them because he was interested also in the ideas contained in the book. So it wasn't as much he was trying to portray himself a certain way or publicize himself as he was, you know, I think concerned about the contents of these books.
But he was, perhaps in spite of himself, we would call it today a brand, wasn't he?
Yes. And that's a big part of Pettigrew's book, and it sounds so modern, so contemporary, and the Reformation is considered part of the sort of the modernization of the West, an important part of it. But I still think that folks like Luther and Calvin were still very much part of the medieval world and didn't have a sense of what was coming with a kind of market revolution that would occur, oh, two centuries down the line or so. So this is a very small stage in that, but there did become something about books and the inability to control them that allowed Luther, but also other sides of the Reformation, to prosper as well. And the church had no resources to try to contain it, nor did the emperor. And there were other factors as well. I mean, the fact that the Ottomans are invading Europe from the east, and the emperor has to divert a lot of his armies in that direction, also gives Protestants all throughout Europe cover, especially Luther, from what the emperor and princes could do. Of course, there were wars. But what's striking to me in reading these books is that by 1522, even though the Reformation was still very much, you could say, unsettled, but by 1522, there was no going back. It's clear that it was going to be impossible to put this back short. And I don't even think, had the emperor executed or someone executed Luther, which would have been conceivable and had happened to previous dissenters in the church, I don't think that would have changed it either. It was too far gone at that point.
What in time did the church do to try it, if they couldn't put the genie back in the bottle, as you say? What did they do to try to mitigate the effect of the Reformation with respect to Luther and all the stuff that was being published?
Well, by the time that Trent rolls around, the Pope Leo, I believe it is, in early 15th century, he himself is also considered to be the warrior pope. He's also leading wars around Europe, also against the Ottomans. So Europe has a long history of making wars, of these Christians warring with each other. So I don't think that the people in Rome thought that this was going to amount to much, what was happening with Luther. And the emperor, I don't get a clear sense of that either. So when Rome finally does respond in an official way, say with, aside from excommunicating Luther in 1521, things like that, but Luther and Lutheran movement gets cover from Luther's prince and is able, you know, to get a foothold with reforms of the church locally, at least, and other parts of the German-speaking world. But when Trent comes around 1546, there are formal declarations and anathemas pronounced upon Protestants, Lutheran and Reformed and Anabaptist. And there are also interesting language in the Council of Trent about trying to put a clamp on publishing, that any publisher who's going to produce books of a religious nature or produce the Bible has to receive the approval of the person in the diocese responsible for that, you know, maybe even up to the bishop. So there is an effort to try to crack down. That's one side. Positively, what Rome also does is develop a society, the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, as sort of the think tank wing of Roman Catholicism, and they go around trying to re-educate Europe and providing schools, providing education for princes' sons and the like. And it's striking in German-speaking and Reformed lands how many sons of princes wind up going back to Roman Catholicism. And in some cases, the Reformation doesn't last more than a generation or two in parts of Central and Eastern Europe.
Just give us an idea, since to kind of get the big picture on Luther and printing. He's obviously prolific, but how would you estimate the volume of his writing over his career as a reformer?
Well, judging by, I don't have the numbers at my fingertip the way Pettigrew does, but he does remarkable statistics on the number of titles, not just that Luther published, but that were published at the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. And even in Wittenberg itself, the number of titles coming out is extraordinary for such a small little town. But, I mean, I think one way for listeners to conceive of this is to think about the American edition of Luther's works, which, as I recall, in the seminary where I attended, was a full shelf from ceiling to floor, roughly. I mean, so 6-7 feet high, 8 feet high is the top shelf, the floor is the bottom, and maybe 6 feet wide. There were at least 300 volumes, I think, of Luther's works. Now, you would know better than I on this, but it's remarkable. And so some of that material had not been published in the 16th century. So, you know, there are additions to the size in print, but it's still a remarkable number of titles. And so Luther was the biggest representative, especially in the 1520s. And again, it's a striking how difficult it would have been for the church and the state to go back after all that.
Kind of conversely of that, I mean, just to kind of, I know historians don't like to speculate, but let's ask the question, take Gutenberg and the printing press out of it, put it 30 years or 40 years later before Gutenberg comes on the scene. Could Luther had hoped, just all of the things being equal, to have achieved what he was able to achieve in terms of the Reformation, he and others, without that invention?
I don't see how it would have been possible. And that's why I think in the piece I wrote for the journal, it struck me while reading this, and I had recently seen the Steve Jobs movie, and so the parallels between computing, but especially the internet and websites and the early print industry, seems striking. And again, it's a different. I mean, I've lived through before and after the internet and before and after Wi-Fi, and it's just remarkable. And I think that's another way of trying to imagine what happened with Luther. That before Luther, there was very little print. I mean, there was print, obviously. It wasn't as if he were in some ways responsible for it. But the kind of issues that he raised, the kind of printers that were around in Germany and that could publicize this, and that became something sort of like Wi-Fi compared to the internet, maybe. And it just took off.
That, I guess that kind of naturally raises the question, bringing back full circle of where we began. We are often not completely aware of the role that these, we would just call it kind of the technologies, for Luther, the printing press and printing and mass production of books, for us, as you said, the internet and everything that comes with it. As a historian, how does that help you see our time, especially with regard to the ongoing Reformation?
Well, as a historian who actually also believes in the importance of institutions, and here I'm also going to veer into put on my hat a little bit as a churchman, a Presbyterian churchman. And so I have a high estimate of the church and the work of the visible church, the means of grace, the ministry of word and sacrament. So I think there's a temptation, even with printing, but also with the internet, for people to think that the local church and the ministry of the word by a local pastor is not as important, say, as what you can get out of a book or what you can get out of an online sermon or a podcast. So that in some ways the temptation has always been there. It's ramped up now. And I have to say, on a Sunday morning when it's blizzard conditions or something and the church service hasn't been canceled, the thought of staying home and streaming a service has a lot of appeal. But I still think the kind of, this is now putting on my hat as a Bible reader, but the kind of call that Christ made in the Great Commission about discipling the nations by teaching and baptizing is something that has to happen locally. It has to happen person to person. And institutions that enable that to happen, such as denominations or communions, et cetera, are really important for that in training people who can do that, seminary, schools, and whatnot. And so, you know, I don't think Luther ever really envisioned a kind of a disembodied church where you have a flock of people reading the same books or whatever. I think this was something that was going to reform the church, but not challenge or take away the church. And I think the same would go in many respects for the internet. I think it has all sorts of possibilities. I know I use our own church's denomination's website a lot for our confessional statements and the Book of Church Order and the like. It's just amazingly convenient compared to having to stand up and go over to the shelf and pull it down and find the page. But still, as a supplement, I think it's important to see. I think this is also bearing out what Luther was up to, as a supplement to the institutional church and not as a replacement.
Well, I think that's reflected even in one of, you know, Luther's offhand statements about the Reformation when he reflected upon it. He said something like, I wrote, I taught, I preached, otherwise I didn't do anything, sat around and drank beer with my buddies in Wittenberg. all the while the word so greatly weakened the papacy that never a prince or emperor did such damage to it, I think is what he said. It sounds like Luther was aware of the fact that while this may have helped him, this technology, the ongoing work of the church was still around the altar, pulpit, and font.
Right, right, very much so. Yeah, so the personal interaction, you know, talking about the books you read or talking about something you might find online is, it winds up being, I think, incredibly powerful. And then, but also sitting under the ministry of the Word, and if we believe the Holy Spirit actually uses these means, then that's something that I think you could argue God has promised to bless in ways that he hasn't promised to bless, even books or the internet.
Dr. Daryl Hart is visiting professor of history at Hillsdale College. He's author of a recent column for The Wall Street Journal titled The Printing Press Prophet. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Hart, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Todd. Good to talk to you.
When we come back, a few of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line. Then in hour two, we will talk about Sarah in the Old Testament with Dr. Andrew Steinman and teach a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker. Standing firm in a hostile world is the theme of the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th. This confessional Lutheran conference features Issues Etc. guest Adam Francisco, David J. Weber, Joe Abrahamson, attorney Mark Stern, and Professor Alan Quist. If you are in Texas or would like some warmer weather in February, check out the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 5th and 6th at faithlutheransa.org. faithlutheransa.org.
Grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.